And he says that life is full of suffering. So most people thought that Buddhism is very pessimistic, right? But when the Buddha first mentioned about suffering, he doesn't mean to make life more miserable for us. There is a purpose why the Four Noble Truths is structured in such a way that first he has to mention life is suffering, so that we know, we learn to look at it, understanding that there's unsatisfactory imperfection, and then knowing that, then we look deeper. We go into look at the cause for all this unhappiness, all this unsatisfactoriness, and then we want to put a stop to it. There is an end to all this suffering. We wanted to end this suffering. And in order to end this suffering, there is a way, right? There is the Noble Eightfold Path, right? That would be my topic tonight, the Noble Eightfold Path. And I think the Buddha has provided us a very practical way, a very practical path to help us to end our suffering and to make our life more meaningful and a happy life. The beauty of this religion is that it is not a set of belief or set of philosophy for us to uphold, but rather it is something very, very practical, that we can really walk along the path rather than relying on some external beings to remove our suffering. It is a religion that is very sensible. It teaches us to be self-responsible. If we wanted to end our suffering, we want to have happiness, we need to put in the effort ourselves. We need to walk the path, right? Not just based on belief, right? So the very first of all these Eight Noble Paths, the first one is the right understanding, right? We got to understand that we are responsible, right? And we have to look into what do we mean by happiness, and what is the meaning of life, what is the purpose of life. Some of you might be very well traveled, some of you might be very well educated, but what is the use of all these skills, knowledge, if deep within myself, life is empty? Right? So really, we need to have a true understanding of ourselves, of what life is about, the meaning of life. I remember when I was a young girl still studying, and there's once I attend a Buddhist camp, and then my master asked me a question. We were in the discussion of what is the meaning of life, and then he asked me, what goal do you have for your life, what do you want to achieve for your life? And as a young girl at that time, I was very ambitious. And I was taught in school not to accept anything at the face value, argue. And I start to question back my master and argue with my master. I say, hey, your question is not practical, right? It's unrealistic. What I am concerned now, I'm studying now, what I'm concerned is to get this B certificate, right? It is important for my future. So I thought I am being very, very practical, right? So I said I wanted to study hard and get my certificate and graduate. And then the next question he asked, what next? And I thought, then put my skills into practice, into good use, get myself a good job. And then he said, well, good. After that, Isaac, he questioned me again. And I say, ultimately, as a female, I need to get myself a husband, right? And be married and get a husband. And he said, well, and then? I said, then I'll have children and be a good wife and a good mother. And at the same time, I want to build my own career. And he said, good. And then? So, yeah, but perhaps I get old. And then he questioned further, and then? Then suddenly I realized, well, I have to face death. And that really sparkled me. And I began to think very deeply into what do I really want for my life? Is that all? Is that the path that I'm going to take? And what is the meaning of my life? So it really struck me, and I began to look into spiritual life more seriously then. And also, I began to realize that, yeah, ultimately, I'm going to confront death. And at the point of death, I'm not going to bring anything with me. The only thing I will bring with me is my own karma. Right? And at that point in time, when I was still very young, right, and I believe I could get a good husband, a handsome, rich enough to support me, and I believe I could build my own career, but then I'm not going to bring all this with me after my death. In addition, in the process of achieving my career, I could become very, very self-centered. I could become very, very selfish. I could achieve everything I want. I could have the whole world, but I might lose myself. So I think very, very deeply about all this. And then ultimately, I began to decided to pick up the road and live a spiritual life. So I'm not saying that you must pick up the spiritual life or pick up the rope, but I'm saying that it is important that to have a right understanding, to look into our own life, what is the meaning of life, and how could I make good use of my life, right? The time we spend in this world is pretty short, right? Considering that at a young age, as a baby, as a toddler, you spend a lot of time sleeping, and as a child, you spend a lot of time playing. And at old age, we get old, we have sickness, right? If we're in bed, we can't contribute much. So the efficient time, the golden period we have, in fact, is very short, right? So how are we going to make good use of this? Right, so having a right understanding about my life, and that I'm responsible for my own life, I'm responsible for my own happiness, I am responsible for my own destiny. Right, so how you want to lead your life, it all depends on you. Yeah. So with this, that's why if you really understand life, like there's imperfection, is suffering, is imperfection, is unsatisfactoriness, and I'm responsible, and you really feel it, that will give you the sparkle, the inner strength, the inner energy to get out of it. Yeah. So next, it's about the right intention. The next noble truth is about the right intention. So we all have this mind and this body, right? But Most of the time, we do things without really knowing why and what we are doing. Right? That is our intention. Right? Why are we coming to the Dharma centers? Right? And why are we practicing? Sometimes we thought we know, but we might not know. Yeah, I come from Singapore, a very tiny little island, and the culture in Singapore is it is a very competitive country, very competitive nation. You heard about the Mr. Kiasu phenomena, right? The word Mr. Kiasu, Kiasu means literally translated into English means afraid of losing. So Singaporeans are very, very competitive. So even they come to Dharma centers, even when they are practicing, taking up the spiritual path, very unconsciously, they also start to compete. Right? If you do 10 minutes of meditation a day, I will do 15 minutes. So I'll be better than you. Right? If you meet 100 curry puffs for the food fair, I will meet 150 spring rolls. That sort of thing. Yeah? So be very, very careful what and why you are doing so. Right? So sometimes we try to appear to be spiritual. Sometimes we appear to be good. But we are not doing all this to make ourselves appear to be good, appear to be spiritual. But really, we got to be very honest and sincere with ourselves. Right? We are doing this to purify ourselves, right? To cultivate ourselves so that we become a better being, to benefit myself as well as to benefit other beings. Right? So with this right intention, then your path will be proper. Right? If without this right intention, then whatever you do might appear to be good, but in reality you are just satisfying your self-ego, right? Fulfilling your self-ego. So we all are very egoistic beings. So be very, very careful, right? Even when we come to the Dharma center, right? Set up with the right intention that I'm spending my night here to learn good teachings, to cultivate myself, to benefit myself, and then to benefit others. Right? So if you have this right understanding and this right intention, then you become very wise, right? With your speech, with your action, with your thoughts. Right? So this religion teaches us to be a very wise person. So these two comes under the category of wisdom. Right? So under the category of morality, you have right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Right? In terms of right speech, so it involves avoiding telling lies, avoid harsh speech, avoid malicious speech, avoid idle talking, right? So first, avoid lying. So in this society, it seems that a lot of people lie. And some people tell me it's impossible not to lie, especially when you're in the work. And some were saying that, what about white lie? Right? A lie is a lie, whether it's white lie or not. Right? So if we are sincere in practicing, then we will think a way out. Right? So what if you have, when it's something that it is not nice to say, are you going to say it? So we have this mentality of whether to say it or not to say it. But what about in between? Okay, to give you another example, you know, as a monastic, people bring in food, donate food to us. And sometimes we are so accustomed to our own own culture, our own food. Like for myself, I'm very accustomed to Asian food. So what if sometimes people bring some food in and I accept the food donation, and sometimes the food really, really doesn't suit my taste bud. And some donors, they will sit in front of you and like to look at the way you eat, and they even ask you, is the food nice? So how do we practice not lying? Right, when somebody cook a dish for you and then you do not find the food nice, could you tell him and say that your food tastes yucks? That is, I'm not lying. You're not lying, but you might hurt the other party. Right? But that doesn't mean that you have to lie. Yeah, they are skillful means. Right? So if you are serious in cultivating right speech, truthful speech, we begin to think of a way out. And here we develop our wisdom. So for example, if a person brings food, donate food to you, and you do not like the food, so instead you could, how should I say, instead of telling the person directly, right, the food is not nice, be kind, alright, be appreciative of the effort that the person has put in. Right, so instead you could praise a person, right? I believe you have spent a lot of time preparing the food. I appreciate your effort being put in. Right, in this case, you didn't tell a lie. Yeah, you're truthful, it's truthful, isn't it? You appreciate the person, you develop this sort of kindness, right? And you tell the other party. Or instead, you could directly say that I find it a bit too salty or too spicy, right? Instead of turn the person down and then the person have no more courage to bring in food for donation the next time. Yeah? So in terms of harsh speech, right? So when our mind gets angry, our speech becomes very harsh, right? So here the Buddha laid down this, you know, right speech. So it gave us a guideline, right? So try not to use your speech to harm other people, right? Instead, practice speech that are loving, that are encouraging. We all have the experience when we get angry, we say something which we regret later, right? So constantly we have to practice this sort of loving kindness, practice loving speech, and do not use your speech to harm others, right? Use your speech wisely, right? And the other part of the right speech is about not to idle talk, right? So I think in the modern society, apart from telephone, we have this MSN, SMS, right? It's too much of idle talking, right? And with this idle talking, it distracts our mind, right? your mind get distracted and you talk unnecessarily and waste a lot of your time. So it's better, you know, to not to idle talk, but use your time wisely, right? Read books, read a Dharma book, or do your meditation, right? Life is so short, so make good use of your time. Take good care of your speech. Talk only when it is necessary, right? So you got no lying, no harsh speech, no idle talking. The other one is no malicious speech. You know, sometimes we go around telling stories and cause people to quarrel, which is bad, right? From quarrel between friends to quarrel between countries, right? So here again, not to say things that is not true and causes quarrel, right? Instead, we should help people and then practice speech that is loving, that brings harmony to people, right? And the other part of the Eight Noble Paths, right action, right? So this is very closely related with our five precepts, right? Not killing. So by not killing, we respect life, right? And in the Buddhist practice, when we talk about not killing, it also encompasses insects. Right? Not only not kill people, but even for insects, we do not kill. Alive, it is alive. Right? So it could be any life flying in the air, swimming in the water, or crawling on the land. So some people were asking me, do you find it ridiculous to have compassion towards insects, towards cockroaches? How could I not kill cockroaches and love the cockroach? Right. So my question is, where do we develop this idea that cockroach is harmful? Think about it. How do we get this idea? When I was a little girl, I have skin disease. I got skin inflammation. So I take Chinese herbs, and one of the ingredients was the droppings of the cockroach. It tastes yucky, isn't it? But I took the medicine and it cured. I'm healthy now. I got no more skin disease. Yeah, so our mind is very weak. Alright, it gets distracted easily. And with consumerism, with advertisement, very naively, we believe what the advertiser says. And the advertiser tells you it's okay to kill, and you will buy that can to spray to kill. So if that spray can kill the cockroach, is the liquid in that can more poisonous, or is the cockroach more poisonous? Think about it. Yeah? And when you spray, it's going to evaporate into the air. You're going to breathe it in. There will be some remains on the ground. Right? And the other thing is, spare a thought. Think about it. How the cockroach get into my house? I have been practicing Buddhism for more than 20 years. And hasn't been using the can, that spray, for more than 20 years. You don't see my house full of cockroaches. Yeah? So how does a cockroach get into my house then? If I finish my meal, am I going to leave the dishes in the basin not washing it? Definitely I'm inviting the cockroach into my house. And after inviting the cockroach into my house, you use that can and spray it. It is very unfair to the cockroach. Right? So be very mindful and very careful, be very aware of what we are doing. Right? And also if we've tried very carefully, we are in fact very selfish. Right? Because my happiness is more than this cockroach. So this dirty little cockroach, get out of my house. I want my house to be clean. I want myself to be happy. Yeah, very unconsciously, very subtly, we have this sort of mental attitudes. Right? So in fact, we are quite selfish. We are quite irresponsible. Right? So when we start to practice not killing, we begin to look at life and respect life more seriously, and also we take responsibility on our part. Right? So by not killing, we begin to build harmony. Right? So you do see those monks and nuns practicing in the dense forest, but you never hear about monks or nuns being attacked by spiders, being killed by scorpions. Right? Because of this sort of mental attitudes, you practice loving kindness, the animals feel safe with us and they do not harm you. Right? Why do you want to kill or animals or insects? Because you thought that they are going to harm you. And that poor little insects, they have the same mentality. You are going to harm me. So we attack each other. But if we develop this sort of mental attitudes of respecting life and developing this sort of loving kindness, the animal or the insects feel safe, right? And you can live harmoniously together. Yeah, and you'll be safe. Yeah. So next, no killing. Next, no stealing. Right? Respecting people's property. Right? Things that do not belong to you, do not take them. Right? So if we begin to live to respect people's property again, there will be more harmony in the society, more security in the society. Right? It is a sad thing because when you look at the society, there are more beautiful houses built, but more fences now. Right. So we aren't really progressing, right? Our house looks bigger, beautiful, but within our mind, there's more insecurity. And if we look into the building history of Australia, you could see the changes, right? The whole older houses, they do not have fence, right? And the new house, they have fence. And not only they have fence, the windows got grills, and then they have security alarm. And all these are meant to prevent all these act of stealing, right? So if each and every one of us took the responsibility upon ourselves and tried to practice not stealing, then we feel safer, right? Our mind will be at ease. The other thing is about sexual misconduct, right? As a human being, we all have this instinct, right? This sexual instinct. But the fact is, as a human being, we have this mental capacity to understand the body, to understand the mind, and also to manage the body. Alright, unlike animals, right? They just follow what the body tells them. Right? But we are human beings. We shouldn't just listen to the sexual instinct, but really we need to manage it. Right? To maintain the sexual activities just within husband and wife or your sex partner, and respect each other. So in this case, again, if we practice like this, there will be more harmony in the family, and there will be more harmony in the society, right? The other thing about right action is no killing, no killing, no sexual misconduct. No, have I finished the four? The four, yeah. So this is for the right action, which have not killing, not lying, no stealing, no sexual misconduct, right? And then the next part about the noble evil path is about having a right livelihood, right? I believe most of us here have a job, right? You work, and if we spend 8 hours working in a day, that takes up 1/3 of your day. So it is important to choose a career, right, that falls within the category of right livelihood. Because you need to earn a living and you spend so much time working in a day. So try to avoid a career that inflicts harm on others, right? Such as selling liquor, right? We know there's a lot of people being killed because of they drink and they drive, right? So from the Buddhist perspective, it is bad to drink, because when you drink, it clouds your mind wouldn't be clear, right? And if your mind is not clear, the mind is the forerunner, right? It affects your body, it affects your speech, right? Look at the drunken man. How does he behave? How does he walk? How does he speak? Right? So, try not to take up a job that involves in liquor, whether you are selling liquor, right? Because that's not going to bring you good, not going to bring you good to others. The other part is try to avoid a career that sells arms, right? Because by selling arms, they involve killing, they involve war, right? So these are also bad for the humanity. The other part is try to avoid a career that involves killing, right? Such as being a fisherman or working as an animal slaughter, right? So we have to take a career Do not inflict harm or sufferings on others. Right? If you have a skills, right, put your skills into good use. Right? If you are a chef or working in the food industry, right, put your skills into something that is beneficial to others, right? Cook something that solves the hunger of the people, right? Provide food, healthy food, right? So that when people eat, it solves their hunger, they can continue to work, right? So each and every one of us got their unique skills. So put your skills all into good use with the good intention. Then your life will become meaningful, right? Apart from earning a living, you're doing something that is meaningful, right? So that's right livelihood. And then we have to practice the right concentration, right? Our mind gets distracted easily, right? Our mind is very fickle. So we really need to learn to be focused, right? Constantly bring your mind back. And meditation becomes important here, right? You gotta learn how to meditate to constantly bring this distracted mind back and focus on what you are doing and why you are doing. When we are confronted with a problem, right? So if the mind is not focused, right, we will be easily distracted and get caught up with our emotions. Yeah, so instead of solving the problem, we get angry, we get worried, and we get so stuck with this emotion. So we need to practice this concentration, right? Bring your mind back and focus on how to deal with the problem, right? If the problem can be solved, then your mind should be focused on solving the problem. If the problem could not be solved, then just accept the reality, accept as it is. But because our mind is so unfocused, instead of solving the problem, we always linger around all the emotions there and get so stuck out there, and it just roll on and on and on and on, right? So learn to focus and concentrate, and then be very mindful, right? Develop this mindfulness and awareness, right? Aware of your own thoughts and how your thoughts affect your behavior, right? We have this mentality of not having problem, right? When we got the problem solved, we hope that it's solved forever, and then we do not want to see another problem popping up again. But let's ask ourselves, is this realistic? Is it possible not to have any problem? Yeah. It is only possible when you're lying in the graveyard. Yeah. So that's why the very first noble truth the Buddha said, life is full of suffering. Right? So it will be very unrealistic if we have this mentality and hope that there's not going to be any problem. Right? So instead, we should try to change our mental attitudes and be strong enough to confront, right, to address the problem, to learn how to deal with the problem rather than running away from the problem or not having problem, right? So that's why developing this style of mindfulness is very important, right? And meditation is important because that will give you the emotional balance, right? When we have problems, we become very emotionally disturbed. So with the practice of meditation, right, you learn to focus on the problem and you develop this mindfulness, you got to understand, right, and learn to deal with the problems, right, because as long as you are alive, problems are going to come again and again, right? Finally, come to the last one, is about the right effort, right? So in order to be successful in life or in any area, we have to put in an effort. However, the right effort that is presented in the Noble Eightfold Path is not that subtle effort that we try to make something happen. It is not so. But rather, it is the type of effort that is a balanced type of effort, balanced, the middle path. There was a story during the Buddha's time about this person who was practicing very, very hard. And the harder he tried, the more problem he got. You know, sometimes you sit there, you say, I want to be peace and calm. I wanted to be peace and calm. And the more you try, the more disturbed you become. So this person, he was trying very, very hard, right? And he couldn't get what he wanted in his spiritual pursuit. He went to see the Buddha. And this guy was once a musician. So the Buddha asked him, when you play, I think he was playing the harp, right? The Buddha asked him, when the string got too tight, will the music sounds nice? He said, no. When the string is too loose, will the music sounds nice? He said, no. Right, so the Buddha said, yeah, that's it. Right, you play the music, you know how to make it nice, you need to be balanced. Right? So in our process of practicing, we need to have this thought of balanced effort, right? Not push ourselves too hard, but not too relaxed. Right? This sort of effort, you know, to a balanced mind, constantly bring back and be mindful and understand yourself, right? Understand and put an effort into cultivating your mind, your body, and your speech, right? So this is what, from the Buddhist perspective, what right effort is, right? So constantly bring the effort back to the own cultivation, right? And make good use of your mind and your body, make good use of your life to make your life a meaningful one. And we all want a happiness, right? So if we all want happiness, the effort need to come from you, right? The Buddha just show you the path. So you got to walk the path by yourself, right? No one helps you but yourself, right? Not even the Buddha. The Buddha can help you. The Buddha can just share with you his experience. The Buddha can just lay down the path, Right, the rest lies upon you. Alright, that's all I have for you for tonight. And is there any other questions that you would like to raise with regards to tonight's talk? Yes.
I'm working in an aquarium store. My supervisor asks me sometimes to, when he sees fishes on the way to die, they're lying on the bottom, he's still breathing, but really they are going to die. He asks me to put them in the freezer. And my question is that really to kill, or is it to end the suffering a bit faster?
So your question is, since the fish is dying, I might as well kill it to let it end the suffering. Is that so? Yeah. From the Buddhist perspective, again, we got to understand karma, right? So there is a life spent being a human being or be the fish. Right, so if you put the fish in the freezer, just imagine yourself in the freezer. How do you feel? Right, it will be terrible, isn't it? So you wouldn't know the fish. You might add more sufferings to the fish, and the fish might be dying with a very angry mind. So we are creating a bad karma with the fish. So even if the fish is dying, let everything take its natural course, right, and let it die at its natural course. So from our point, we thought that we end the sufferings, but you might add more sufferings to the fish. Okay? If there's no other questions, I'll end my talk tonight. I'd like to do a soul transference dedication of merits in my own tradition. So I just do it in Mandarin. Even if you do not understand what I'm saying, just bow your palms and generate a good heart. So by spending your 1.5 hour here tonight listening to the talk, you're practicing learning something good and practicing something good. So in doing so, you cultivate good merits. And when we cultivate good merits, we share with others. Okay, let's bow our palm together. 愿以此功德，普及一切，我等与众生皆共成佛道。